Hey, good day. Back after another sabbatical, because the world is crazy. And I'm going to shift gears today. I guess I can't remember if I stated that in any of my previous podcasts that I kind of needed to shift focus. I think I did. But, oh, by the way, it's Friday, November 13th, 2020. So, make of that what you will. But I can't remember if I stated that I was going to kind of shift gears in my podcasts or not. There'll definitely be some political stuff and creepy weirdo stuff like clown demons here and there, because that's all in my worldview. But I've been taking to heart a concept that Jordan Peterson talks about, and it's make sure your house is in perfect working order before you go criticizing the world. And I had not been doing that at all. And to keep it vague and brief, when you neglect first things that need to come first, they devolve into chaos. So today I'm going to do a book review. I just listened to audiobook twice this week, and it personally rocked my whole world, and it was everything I needed to hear. The first time I went through it, I was so personally upset that I had to call a friend and vent and rant. I called two friends, and then I vented and ranted personally with another friend about some of the stuff. And I'm still kind of chewing on a lot of it and mulling it over and working it out. But the book was, without any further ado, you like that little cliffhanger I did? I'm hoping that makes me a good storyteller. But the book was called No More Mr. Nice Guy by, what is the author's name? It'll pop into my head in a second. But, this doctor, I believe he's a psychiatrist, but it's a doctor. On the title, his name is Doctor something. He wrote this book 15 years ago, and the new foreword of the newest edition said that the sales keep increasing on the book as time goes on. So, I think it's because, well, free market, it's obvious. A lot of people need to hear this information. And I know, personally, my male listeners to this podcast probably don't need this information as much as I do, or as much as I did. But since it was so deeply personal to me and very helpful, I want to kind of give a gestalt and touch on the high points, and I highly recommend the book, No More Mr. Nice Guy. And I've realized and learned that there's tons of podcasts and seminars and workshops and groups and men's clubs and whatever that have kind of arisen out of this, and I've touched base and reached out to a few of those because I need to recover from this syndrome. And it could be, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a psychiatrist, I have no credentials in this field, so this is my personal opinion. I think it could definitely be described as an ailment of sorts, because it definitely has symptoms. Because the things that nice guys describe are all kind of universal, and there's patterns of behavior and yada yada yada. So what is the point of the book? No More Mr. Nice Guy. What's wrong with being nice? Aren't nice guys good? Isn't it good to be nice? Where's the inherent problem? And I'll get to that. But we've all heard the phrase, nice guys finish last. And I am a typical nice guy. So maybe describing myself in my personal worldview and how I see things will help a lot of people identify with, okay, I agree with that, I see that, I do that. And then I'll kind of pick it apart. And then I think at the end I'm going to pull back and kind of reveal the greater implications and why this is happening. And I might even try to make kind of a tangential connection to something else that may or may not be helpful. So me as a nice guy, I'm a nice guy. In conversation with anybody I like, I'm an extrovert as well, and I think a lot of nice guys are extroverted. I love talking to people. I love listening to people. I love hearing what they have to say. It makes me feel good to listen and give feedback. And I also enjoy talking about myself if it relates to what we're talking about, and sharing, and anybody and everybody. It doesn't matter who. And I up until, you know, absolute necessity 4 years ago when I got married, I didn't have any real enemies at all. Any personal boundaries with anybody. I had made no personal boundaries with anybody. I could have had, you know, some major disagreements with somebody, or they could have treated me wrong or badly or whatever, and you know, I'm like a duck where it was water off my back instantly, because I was easier, and that is easier. You know, path of least resistance type of person. It wasn't until I got married and had to cut off some toxic relationships, because, you know, I had children and a wife and whatever. So I guess it's safe to say that I've been a recovering nice guy since I got married and started taking up responsibility and stepping into an area of life where a lot of these things I'm going to talk about were necessary, but they were very difficult and very tough, and I didn't understand them, and I whined about them and thought I was a victim and didn't think it had to be this way, and even blamed my wife for a lot of this stuff, thinking she was just being too rigid or controlling or whatever, when she wasn't. So conversation, I love talking to people. I can spend hours doing it. I love being around people. I smooth things over. Everyone's comfortable when they talk to me. That's a big goal of mine, is that when people talk to me, they're very comfortable. And that's an okay thing. Not all these nice guy traits are bad. It's just you have to use them in balance with other things. I was a personal trainer for 6 years or seven, and I think a lot of my success as a personal trainer was in that, and most of my clients were women, because just statistically women spend more on their appearance than men. But I did have some male clients, but female, you know, a female client in that atmosphere where it's very vulnerable, where they're sharing, you know, the frustrations with their weight or their diet or their mood or their libido or how they feel or what they eat or no energy, or even like my husband's not attracted to me, you know, so that stuff's very personal and vulnerable. So being a nice guy and a smoother over in conversation made my career as a trainer to be successful, because there wasn't any harsh confrontations. There wasn't any overt boundaries that weren't obvious, like sexual stuff, which is obvious to most people. So in that respect, with that career that I had at one time, that caused me to be very successful. But then where it went wrong was once the relationship is established and I was personal training that person, and, you know, giving them guidelines to follow for food and exercise and sleep and water and whatever, when they weren't following those things, being a nice guy didn't work. So because I didn't establish boundaries and I didn't always tell them the truth, I would tell them what they wanted to hear, and that caused some of my clients who didn't, you know, take the personal responsibility and doing what I told them to do, cause them to fail. And that was where it was my job to be, to tell the truth, which can be harsh or terse, and help them to continue to be successful since they were paying me money. But I never did those things, and that's where I failed the most as a personal trainer, was failing to understand and take action when there was conflict. So there's an example. Another thing nice guys do is they avoid conflict. So I went from conversations to conflict. So I think it needs to be said that nice guys get validation from other people. We don't get validation from ourselves, versus an alpha male who gets all their validation from everything they do for themselves. They don't need, desire, crave, or care if other people validate them or not. Well, nice guys thrive off validation from other people. And I obviously won't get into every topic, but I guess the book talks about how that comes from childhood trauma of some sort. And it's causing me to have to think back to my childhood about what types of childhood trauma I received and how it caused me to react, you know, in a safe, non-confrontational, smooth way, path of least resistance type way. And it probably has something to do with losing my father when I was 12. But I haven't fleshed that out completely. And then tangentially quick here, side rabbit trail, is most nice guys are doing something completely opposite of dad. So for me, dad wasn't there, so I'm obviously doing something different. For others, dad was a jerk, so they're doing something different. Or for another, dad was emotionally unavailable, so they're doing something different from dad. So nice guys all have this commonality, is that they're doing something opposite of their father. Or if their father wasn't there, then they're obviously doing something different than their father, because their dad wasn't there. So, and if their father wasn't there, they were raised by their mother, and mothers can raise sons to a certain extent, and then the fatherly role obviously needs to come in and fill the gaps. So as I'm talking and thinking, my nice guy-ness or my nice guy syndrome probably came from lack of a father and being raised by a mother. And then I had a bunch of sisters, so, and no brothers, but a lot of that's just conjecture, because I have no idea. But where was I at? Non-confrontation. No conflict, no confrontation. We avoid it like the plague, because we're afraid. We're afraid of confrontation, because if we get external validation from other people, why would we want to piss somebody off? Why would we want to make somebody mad? Well, we don't. And we'll actually go to the most insane, crazy lengths of self-sacrifice and personal sacrifice to keep somebody else happy, no matter the cost. And the cost is honestly on me, on us. Nice guys will sacrifice their own beliefs, things they think are true, their own feelings, and their own thoughts and desires and everything, for the sake of keeping somebody else happy. So to keep getting that external validation from another person, we'll sacrifice all our wants and desires and needs. We make ourselves virtually unimportant to ourselves. And that's a type of self-deprecation. So for the majority of my life, I've been deprecating myself, to the point where my value personally is less than somebody else. And that's appropriate sometimes, you know, in a relationship with your wife or husband or whatever, or even a Christian principle is seeing other people better than yourself. But that obviously has limits. And it can't be done at the expense of the truth. So another aspect of maintaining a relationship who gives you external validation is you're not telling the truth and you're not being honest to yourself. You're not being true. You're not being true to yourself. So if you have an honest emotion, or you have something you want to say, or if you have a thought and you think it's going to be harmful and confrontational to that person who's giving you what you desire the most, which is validation, then you're actually going to be dishonest and you're going to lie to yourself. And you won't even know you're doing it. You'll stuff it down. You'll stuff down your emotions, and they'll build up, and they'll build up, and they'll build up. And you don't even know you're doing it. I didn't even know I was doing it. Because the person with whom I'm interacting and their validation of me and their thoughts of me and who they think I am is so important to me that I would lie to myself about how I feel about that person, or I would lie to myself about, and even unconsciously lie to myself and be dishonest with myself just for the sake of keeping that relationship smooth or even keeled. Because the heightened value of another person validating you, which is obviously misplaced, takes precedent. And then what I'm immediately thinking of is that is misconstrued as virtue. Jordan Peterson says harmlessness is not a virtue. And I could go off into an hour-long rant about that, where a lot of men, a lot of males, even like a lot of young boys, think that being nice and harmless is a virtue because they don't ever upset anybody. They never get upset. They never show their anger. They're always, you know, go with the flow, even keeled, easy going. And that makes everybody around them feel pretty good. So they misconstrue that as a virtue. So it's virtuous to be harmless, or virtuous to be passive, or virtuous, it has some type of religious or moral praiseworthiness when it does not at all. And this is one of the things I have to wrap my head around more, is that a harmless person has less value. A harmless person can't defend an innocent person. A harmless person can't defend their own life. A harmless person can't rise up to a stressful situation or occasion and do the right thing for the sake of right. A harmless person who thinks it's virtuous will allow wrong things and wrongful actions from other people slide. And the victims from all of that tend to be unascertainable. It's like a exponential curve in their life, where the people that are in their life will be harming them, or harming their loved ones or people around them, and it'll never stop. It'll never stop until the nice guy realizes he needs boundaries for himself and needs to set boundaries for other people. And if you've never done that, you start to do it, it's going to be chaotic. Things will burn down to the ground and suck a lot, but then out of the ashes rises order. So you have to go through that process. Burn some things off. So being harmless and nice and even keeled and never rocking the boat, nice guys perceive that as a virtue. But it's at the expense of the truth. You're not going to say what needs to be said. You're not going to tell the truth about how you feel. So you're de facto lying. So when Jordan Peterson, and this is kind of neat for me, what he says, tell the truth, or at least don't lie, that's a bigger and broader concept for, you know, general life. But for the nice guy, that means stop lying to yourself, and speak the truth no matter whose feelings it's going to hurt. And I think the only way for a nice guy to get around that is to realize that your feelings and wants and needs are just as important as anybody else's. And that's difficult for a nice guy. To do something for yourself when you would rather sacrifice it for somebody else seems anathema. It seems counterproductive or counterintuitive. It seems wrong. But the thing is, nice guys always come up wanting in their relationships. They always come up wanting with the things they need, whether intimately with their partner or with their family or with their home life. They're always empty, bitter, and resentful because they're always giving, but they're never receiving in the way they want. So it becomes a vicious cycle where they give in ways that, ironically, in ways that people don't even want or expect or need or desire. And then nothing ever comes their way in the way that they need or the way that anybody needs. So they harbor the resentments. And then here's the clincher. When you're harboring resentments towards, let's say, your spouse or your kids or your friends or your job, then you start sabotaging. You start secretly sabotaging your life. So you start self-medicating maybe with alcohol or nicotine or pornography or something illicit. You start to withdraw and you start to find a way to deal with the resentments with things that will make you feel better. So maybe with food, stress eating or binge eating or... And I actually went through a period of that where my resentments because of my lack of success in certain areas of my life were everybody else's fault and nothing was coming my way even though I was working so hard and kind of a whiny victimhood mentality that I was actually creating myself because I wasn't validating myself. I wasn't taking actions as a man or as a responsible person and putting my responsibilities and my needs first, but I was waiting for everybody else to fulfill them for me. I was waiting for, you know, love to come my way or somebody to come my way to help me with this or that or because one of the fundamental beliefs of a nice guy, and I maybe should have opened up with this, is that if you're just a good person and you do good and you sacrifice how, you feel and you never get angry or upset or you just kind of float through life, doing the right thing, quote unquote, with whatever that is. And that's kind of different for everybody. But like for religious people, this might strike home. If you just go onward in your life doing good things and being good and not worrying, just kind of hopping from lily pad to lily pad, all of your life's dreams will come true. You'll find the love of your life and you'll get the family that you always desired or you'll get that dream job or, you'll be blessed by God, basically. The heavens will open up and shower down blessings upon you. That's one of the fundamental beliefs of a nice guy, and I believed it. And I, at this point, am actively trying to delete that belief. And the problem with doing that is when you try to delete or get rid of or adopt a different belief, it can be painful, it can be arduous, it can make you upset, which I was and still kind of am, but it's died down a little bit. But the point is, it's very difficult. But that belief, I think a lot of people have it, that if you're just a good person, good things will come your way. Well, that's not true. That doesn't pan out anywhere in life. Good people get cancer, breast cancer, prostate cancer, and they die. Good people will send their, kids to a church camp, and one of their daughters dies in a car accident on the way there. Good people will work hard and get fired for no reason. Good people will get mistreated. Good people will have accidents. Good people will have malevolent things. And people come along to take advantage of them. And I think that this whole idea of nice guys having this false belief that if they're just good, good things will happen to them, and they'll be fulfilled and happy, and their life will be easy and smooth and stress-free, is a fundamental denial of the true nature of life. So the book doesn't talk about this. It just talks about that false belief of the nice guy, you know, at their very root, at their very core. So to dovetail, another piece of the pie here to give it a fuller expression is that belief totally undermines the true existence of evil and malevolence. Sure, you can be good and go through life trying to be a good person with whatever that means. Even though the Bible tells us there aren't any good people. Should be at the first clue. Obviously, we try, but... a tangent side thought is, if you believe you're good, you're deceiving yourself. So, and to hearken back, nice guys are full of deception and self-deception. They're dishonest for one, which causes them to be liars about little things, which causes them to be untrustworthy, which causes them, you know, and then the snowball rolls down the hill. But to go back, that belief system that a nice guy has, the fundamental belief that if you're just good, good things will come, totally rejects and doesn't take into account the idea that there's malevolence in the world. There's evil. There is absolute catastrophe. There is chaos. There's mass shootings. There's bank robbers. There's muggers. People get stabbed for no reason. Cops get shot in the face. And there's malevolent people in your life. There's predators out there. There's snakes. And there's bullies. So I can maybe share a story, and I don't know where it'll go, but I lived in North Carolina when I was in 10th grade, and there was a lot of shenanigans that went on at school with a lot of the kids there, and there was every race there. There was black, white, Asian, Hispanic, and but I'm white, and I was definitely in the minority, and I know a lot of these minorities didn't have dad at home, but I got picked on a lot, and being a passive person and not letting it bother me, and then maybe some twist of fate learning to laugh about it or whatever, or just kind of take it, kind of just take the licks. I never got beat up, but I got picked on because I was new. I even once was playing football with a bunch of kids, and I was the only white guy, and my own teammates were even tackling me or whatever. And I just laughed through it and tried harder and harder to kind of like earn my stripes. So I guess I don't know if in that situation it was helpful, but, and that might be more into a different territory of like, that was kind of an initiation ritual type thing where it's like, if we pick on this guy, is he going to be a good sport about it? So maybe that story was useless. I don't know, but, I guess it does connect with, you know, that's kind of malevolent, it's kind of evil, it's kind of sinister, it's kind of wrong, but I guess it did kind of teach me that part of life is taking your licks. Part of all this game is, you know, can you shoulder these burdens? You know, and they start small when you're young and they get bigger and bigger. But the fundamental belief of a nice guy is if you're just good and do good, then everything will be good, but that's not true. Christ tells us to take up your cross and walk. So you need to bear a load, you need to bear a burden, and you need to do it willingly. And therein lies all the meaning of your life that makes it fulfilling. Is it's the arduous walk, it's the bearing of the burden, it's the bearing of the load. It's not the stress, or the whining about the stress, or praying for relief, or any of that. It's the bearing of the burden. And what you learn through the process, and as you go through these trials, it's how you carry yourself during them. And I've been going through some trials lately where I noticed my posture was severely sloping and sloping and sloping, because I was just burnt out, toiled out, and just 100% stressed out. And one of my kids noticed, made a joke to his brother. He goes, yeah, he looks stressed out. And it was hilarious. It was. But I saw myself in the reflection at the same time, and I had noticed I hadn't been standing up straight with my shoulders back through all this, through the whole time. But that's just more on, you know, the balance of all this stuff. But I do want to get into, you know, the secretive and the deceptive stuff. So if you're a nice guy and you're constantly sacrificing things, you know, for the sake of getting something out of a relationship or a situation or a job or whatever, you're going to be let down because you're not verbalizing exactly what you want and need, so you don't know how to negotiate for yourself because you're not valuable to yourself. If you're putting aside things you think, feel, and want to say, then you've actually let go of all your personal power. And I struggle with that one the most, because I don't think I'm important or as important as others. I like putting all people above me. It makes me feel good. But that in turn causes me to not get the things that I actually know I need, and the things that I desire, and the things I want to achieve. Another small weird thing about nice guys is they're all just moderately successful, you know, kind of middle of the road, middle class. And I fall right into that category. I'm not a high achiever. And I'm not a high achiever because if you don't know your value or your worth, then you're not going to push for more. And if you're accustomed to lowering yourself for the sake of others, which I'll say sometimes is appropriate, then you're going to come up wanting in the end with whatever situation you're in. You know, your marriage or your family or your job or friends. You're going to come up wanting because there is nary a time where you say, nope, I'm not standing for this because I want this. And when you start doing that, it's difficult. People start to bark and yell at you, or they get upset with you. But you have to come to a point and a bridge where you realize that it's not your problem, even though you might love them, but that there's things you need, and you need to take care of yourself for the sake of your own sanity, for the sake of your own personal life and where you want to be and what you want to achieve. Those things are important. And that's difficult for me, even though simultaneously someone else in my life wanted to achieve more and rise higher. I would do everything to bend over backwards to help them. But a nice guy needs to realize not everybody's there to even do that for them, with them. So you kind of have to leave other people's emotions in the dust, so to speak, if there's nothing you can do about it. Your happiness is your responsibility. Your needs are your own responsibility. People-pleasing doesn't ever get what you want. It just causes people to respect you less, and then they walk all over you. And they might not even know they're doing it, and they take advantage of you. And if you don't do these things for yourself, you harbor, and I've said this, but I'm kind of figuring out where to go with it here. You harbor resentments, you're constantly frustrated, and you're not getting love that you want, you're not getting intimacy you want or desire. You're just kind of in a humdrum, repeating the same stuff. The average nice guy just starts to try harder. Like, I'll sacrifice more of myself. I got to the point where I was missing showers at home because I thought I was being helpful by putting myself aside. I was missing showers for like maybe 2 days max, and then feeling crummy and grimy on like the third day at work. And I was even forgetting to brush my teeth, you know, for a day or two. And that's, I got to a point where I realized that is disgusting. I feel gross. And this is something I'm sacrificing that nobody even knows I'm doing. It's just gross. And why in the heck am I doing that? Like, I have needs. I need to bathe and brush my teeth and take care of myself and my body. And I was eating garbage. And I was growing resentful that I was sacrificing these things that I'm responsible for to do and get done and take the time to do and do it well and do it in a good way. So things that were sliding, you know, like my weight or my personal energy or my personal hygiene, you know, all of that was just stupid things to be sacrificing. But as a nice guy, I was doing it because I thought it was being helpful, because I wanted to be externally validated by all the time, effort, and energy I was putting into, you know, work, you know, to impress my boss or to impress my family or provide for my family or whatever, which they're already all appreciative for. So I didn't need more, I didn't need validation from those sources. I should have already been content with the fact that I knew I was doing a good job. But I wasn't. But I had to shift. I've had to shift gears, and over the course of having the job that I have, it was arduous and terrible for the first year until I just made the conscious choice and decision to stop whining about it and do the best job I could do. And I started to feel good about it. So there, I guess I already have a couple toes in the water with this, because I just, through the course of listening to the likes of Jordan Peterson and whatnot, kind of already realized that if you want to continue doing something that sucks, like a job, for an extended period of time, you kind of need to just suck it up and do it, and do it to the best of your ability, because therein is the validation you're looking for. So I can trust myself that at work I'm going to do a great job, and that makes me feel good. And I'm done whining about it, and I know some of it's intensely difficult, and a lot of it's going to suck, but my family was tired of me whining about it, and my friends were tired of me whining about it, and every time I was talking to my boss, it was what went wrong that day, and he didn't want to hear about it. And so yeah, I had a couple toes in the water. I was like, okay, I'm done doing that and complaining. I'll just do as good a job as I can. And there was some self-validation in that. Now I enjoy what I do, even though I don't plan on doing it forever. And I think that's kind of an implicit thing that's in the Bible, in Proverbs, where it says, whatever work your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. Period, end of story. That seems harsh. It's like, just do it. You know, we tell our kids all the time, just do what I say. Please, just do it. And I think it comes with things like that. These blanket statements and facts or commandments are there so you'll just obey them, and then you're supposed to pay attention to what happens. It's like, oh wow, I feel really good that I did that. I feel really good that, number one, I obeyed that commandment or that idea, that moral principle. And number two, I got the validation that I needed out of it. And I feel good. When you do good things, you feel good. Especially when you do them with no strings attached. Because you build yourself up. But when you're harboring resentments and stuffing your emotions aside and putting yourself down and not being honest and degrading yourself morally, you come to a point where you either blow up or you lash out or you freak out or you do something stupid to cause your life to just crash completely. Like, a lot of nice guys get roped into pornography addictions or alcohol addictions, and they ruin their life. Well, it's because they're trying to self-medicate their pain. They're taking actions that are causing the pain, and then they're trying to self-medicate the pain away. Because they're, at the end of the day, they feel unfulfilled. Well, the only way you can fulfill yourself is by personally making and taking actions that make you feel fulfilled. So you have to find something you're passionate about, or you have to find a goal, or you have to have a purpose. And then you personally have to start taking steps and strides that will cause you to feel good about yourself. And quite honestly, you have to kind of feel like, to hell with everybody else. I mean, that obviously comes with some caveats. You know, you have to work things out and take care of responsibilities if you're gonna, you know, go do something that is solely what you want to do. You can't just tell everyone to screw off and then, you know, go do whatever you want. You still have to take care of your responsibilities. So that's a caveat there. But for maybe a nice guy out there needs to hear that it's okay to put yourself first. It's okay to be slightly selfish. And that's going to seem like an oxymoron, but the thing is, with nice guys, you've been selfless in your own way for so long, and it's caused you to be resentful. It's caused you to build up grudges and hatred. It's caused you to cloister and closet yourself and be emotionally unavailable, maybe to your spouse and your kids, and you have retreated into a private life that the average person that knows you would never guess you were even involved in. And personally, I was there, didn't know what was going on at the time, but became heavily dependent on alcohol, and it never got dangerous, but until my wife called me out and told me it needs to stop, it could have gotten bad very quickly. It was a gallon of whiskey a week, and that wasn't good. That's not, I mean, there's nothing wrong with having some whiskey, but using it to self-medicate and numb your pain when you're the cause of your pain and you're not taking the steps to stop the pain, you're just self-medicating, well, then you're going to get addicted. So your actions are the cause of your addictions. And the thing is, you'll believe that you deserve them because you're in so much pain. So it's a very twisted psychological thing. But, and then another thing I'll just touch on, and I don't really know to the extent of all of this, but most nice guys have some strange sexual perverted addiction. So in the book it talks about nice guys having affairs, nice guys using 1-800 numbers for phone sex, nice guys being addicted to pornography, compulsive masturbation, erectile dysfunction, or premature ejaculation, and I don't really know where to put all of that, but I'll throw it out there. So there's always some sort of sexual deviancy, and I have to chew on that more personally, because I guess as far as pornography, I think I'm an average person who probably struggled with it just like every other male, and as you get older, you eventually just realize this isn't real, this is fake, and it's all a show, and it doesn't really get your jollies off anymore like it did when you were 14 and you had an erection all day. But I don't really know where to put that. I think for me personally, I might have some bad expectations in my personal and intimate life about how it should be. And I think that's all I'll really say on that, but it fits the mold that if you're an individual who's dishonest with themselves and others, won't tell the truth because you're worried about how it'll make other people feel, and you're constantly repressing your own emotions and stuffing them down and bottling them up, you're kind of a psychological mess. So I guess it would make sense that the most pleasurable part of life, which is sex, would be perverted as well. So I just throw that out there. For any nice guy listening, I'm sure that they could, you know, potentially think in their private life if the intimate part of their life sexually is not normal or screwed up, or if they're doing stuff in secret or whatever. And chronic masturbation was another one. Like multiple times a day. So I'm just throwing that out there because that was in the book. So where do I go from here? I'm trying to think. There's all these behaviors where it was just helpful for me to hear them because I'd been doing them. But the way out of it is to put yourself first and your needs first. That doesn't mean you're a jerk. That doesn't mean you overreact and, you know, swing the opposite way and just become an a-hole. But it means that bare minimum, you tell the truth, or at least don't lie. And that's a good place to start. And that'll start building up your personal power or your personal self-worth when you start being truthful. And if you can start being truthful, then you're going to, just like doing a job and doing it well and getting the hard work done and stop whining about it, it builds you up, makes you feel good, you can trust yourself. Being truthful with yourself and being honest and definitely not lying does the same thing. It builds you up. It gives you integrity and it gives you confidence. So if you don't have confidence, then you're not gonna be intimate with your wife, because women are attracted to confidence first and foremost. And if you're always walking around like a yuppie, acting like a victim because of all the things you're doing to yourself, then I didn't mention it, but most nice guys are not happy with their intimate relationships and how often they're intimate with their spouses. And if you're constantly trying to people please and put your wife on a pedestal and circle around her emotions and her feelings and her fear and you know, all her moods, and trying to fix it all the time, then that's actually driving you away from what you're actually trying to get. If you're honest and you're truthful first and foremost, then you're leading by example, and you're saying what needs to be said, and you're at, you know, with no, not with reckless abandon and, you know, being mean, but without worrying about the consequences and the fallout, then you're leading and you're confident and you're building yourself up. And if you're not doing that, you're doing the opposite. I don't know if I touched on it, but maybe I need to just run through it again. Early on in the book, one of the chapters is, so what's wrong with being a nice guy? And the author says, well, nice guys aren't, they're the furthest thing from nice. So with all the resentments and the harboring of emotions and feelings and bottling up of everything and on, it nice guys actually become lying, deceiving manipulators. So you give only to get. You can't just give something with no strings attached. Everything has a string attached. It's kind of an unspoken covenant that you're making with people as a nice person. Like, I'm giving because I want to receive something from you because I'm externally validated. And then if you're not getting it, then you start creating in whatever relationship you're in that the expectation is that if I do this for you, then you need to do this for me, or I'm going to whine and pout and throw a fit and maybe blow up. Or maybe have a tantrum. And that's going to drive everything that you want for a fulfilling life away from you. Intimacy with your spouse, success in your job, success with your kids, whatever, etc., etc. So nice guys are actually the furthest thing from nice. They are lying, manipulating deceivers of themselves and everyone around them. And the deception is they've convinced themselves that they're good by pushing basically the truth out of their life. And I think that's a good place to cap that. And the bigger part that I wanted to kind of reference this to is in the Western world, by and large, you know, there's kind of a crisis of masculinity that not a lot of people are aware of, but I'm becoming more and more aware of it. And one of the facts that I can state to back that up is that in the Western world, male sperm counts, I think from the last 50 years for sure, but possibly 100, male sperm counts are down 90%. So that means your testosterone is lower. So on a global scale, the crisis of masculinity is a bigger epidemic than coronavirus, a bigger pandemic than coronavirus. It is one of the real problems. You know, the explosion of crime, the explosion of all the society's problems in the Western world have been because, at the very root, masculinity issues. Dad's not home. We're eating bad foods. Some of the food, I'll even go so far to say, has been designed to lower testosterone. If you lower testosterone in males, detrimental effects to society. And then If you lower it in females, then it's even more detriment to society. But and I think that's just the tip of the iceberg with all this stuff. The Western world has a crisis of masculinity. And a lot of... another proof of that is Jordan Peterson can take tours around the world, at the Western world, and pack stadiums full of men. Not stadiums, but maybe auditoriums or theaters, you know, 3,000 people, and talk to young men about taking responsibility, and everybody's on the edge of their seat, ready to listen, to figure out how to, what they're here for. So there's a crisis of masculinity because dad wasn't home, they were raised by their mothers, they're in the school system with female teachers, and men don't know how to be men, and I fall right into that category. And figuring it out has been long, painful, and arduous. But here's, you know, maybe another piece of the puzzle that can be helpful.